Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 37 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's big deal,
seal of approval.
We'll introduce you to a new Game On program to reward the best in friendly professional game stores.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Thunderstone.
Will the thunder roll its way to your game table or right out the door?
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from triumphant, victorious Indianapolis, Indiana.
Home of your AFC champion, Indianapolis Colts.
And we're getting real excited about the Super Bowl coming
up
in just a week from now.
Saints fans already getting mouthy.
Who is that?
Who is that? We are that.
We are indeed
as
that.
As it were, yeah.
And especially to listener Toby Otero, who has been bugging us on Facebook.
That's right.
We want you know we're coming for you.
Yeah, man. We are dat.
We are indeed dat.
Indeed.
No, we're really actually excited that the Colts and Saints are in the Super Bowl together, and Toby, that we're just ribbing with you because we've been talking about that the whole season. But as we've said before, when the Colts win, we're happier podcasters. We put on an even better show.
That's right.
And we got a great one for you this episode where we're going to be talking about the game Thunderstone and our Buy, Try, or Deny, which is a new deck-building card game sort of in the same vein as Dominion.
You knew it was coming.
You knew it, yeah. And so this is the kind of the first one that's got that same mechanic to it. I'm sure there'll be many more after that. But what do we got in our big deal?
Big deal, we're going to introduce the Game On Seal of Approval, which is kind of our criteria for honoring the best in what we call friendly professional gaming stores or just gaming stores in your area. And we'll tell you more about that because as common gamers, we really want to reward those stores that go above and beyond and make a great experience for gamers old and new.
And this could be a great opportunity for you to promote and celebrate your friendly professional game store that's near you. So stay tuned for that. And then in the Game On Inbox, we're going to be talking about lots of stuff. And the most important thing, the Tom Vassell fundraiser.
Yeah, the results are in.
The results are in. So we've got our winner, and we'll be telling you about it. And, that Game On Inbox starts
now. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it. All right, it is the Game On Inbox, and before we even take another step further into the inbox, if one could step into an inbox.
No, don't go another step.
If it were a tangible thing.
That's right.
We do have our, what I call our penance to our man, that is our great sponsor at Myriad Games.
He's our man.
He's our man.
Dan, our man.
I have a man for that.
As always, we're going to talk about Myriad Games, our great sponsor, and they sponsor us on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. You can find them at myriadgames.com. And I wanted to mention that their podcast, Myriad Games Presentations, which has lots of great stuff and way more episodes than we put out, they've just released their Table Talk 2009 Year in Review episode, which, you know, we talked about our sort of a – did we do a year – we didn't do a Year in Review episode, did we?
Not particularly.
I don't
no.
even remember. I was thinking about the Dice Tower doing theirs.
Right.
You know, which
we're not them.
We're not quite them. But anyway, they did this giant episode where they talked about 2009. And so all the people that contribute to that podcast, Dan, Hoju, John Michael, Ashley, David, Jeff, Renee, Charles, Josh, and the whole...
You're making up people at this point. Herbert.
Slim, Lefty.
Tex.
They went through a whole bunch of games from 2009 and gave their favorites in various categories. So go check out their podcast. They've got a great show there. And if you've got a friendly professional game store near you, we'd encourage you to go there and to patronize it. No, that's not the right word, is it? to be
nice
a patron.
Game store.
To be a patron there. And if you don't have a friendly professional game store near you, to check out myriadgames.com. All right, so let's move on to the first part of our inbox, which is always games we've been playing. Cody,
right.
What have you been playing?
Got back into my D&D 4th edition game, and it's going.
You're getting close to wrapping that up, right?
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up here at the end of February, and we're going to play some other games. And it's kind of like we have the option to renew.
Okay.
You know, it's going to, we can pick it up or we can't, you know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, that's going to wrap up end of February. What else have I been playing? Not a heck of a lot, to be completely honest.
Really?
Yeah, been a pretty light week as far as games go. So
okay, well, it's cold. It is cold outside.
It is cold outside.
That's not really an excuse, but
yeah, I should be playing more games.
just throw that out there. Well, I've been, not really playing a whole lot in the way of board games at all either. I've been doing a lot of preparation of stuff. So, I've been painting War Machine stuff. I've now got all of my Holy Zealots primed, and I've painted, base coated one of them, and going to try to finish those up in the next week or so. And the reason is because I'm going to be playing my very first game of War Machine this coming week. So by the next episode, I should have some sort of a session report about that first game. Now, I've done demos at cons and things like that, but I haven't ever played the full game. And I wanted to make sure that my battle group box was assembled and painted. And my buddy David, he's got the Signar group that he's finished painting up. So we're going to get together and just kind of hash through the rules, those two new Mark II rules. We've got our decks of the Mark II cards. We're all set. We're ready to go.
And you've gotten me. I've signed a letter of intent to dip my toe into it.
That's good. That's a good thing.
We'll see.
So we'll see how that goes, and we'll definitely tell you about that. So I've been preparing that. I've also been working on preparing my Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay game that I'm going to be GMing.
Finally.
Yeah, I know.
I'm excited.
And so I cracked open the big box there and all the books and all punched out all the cardboard counters, got all the cards out. And one of the first steps, of course, in any role-playing game is character creation. So I figured that a good practice for me would be to do sort of a fake character creation at home. And so I got my son, Ethan, to create a character. And so it was very exciting. He's 6 years old, and he's never really even played a role-playing game. I think he's intrigued by the idea because he loves to pretend and imagine things. And so when I told him, you can be whoever you want, and I gave him the choices of all the different careers. And so he created a human Reichlander scout by the name of John Sneaker.
John Sneaker,
because he had the stealth. He had the stealth ability, and so he just thought Sneaker was a good last name. So not really a Germanic last name, but but he did a really good job, and so that really gave me some good experience in getting all that together. So far, I really like everything that I'm seeing as far as the careers and the character creation. The whole dice pool mechanic, I think, is going to take a little getting used to. But I like what it's done, and I like the way they've integrated those sort of board gamey components. That really speaks to me quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So we'll have a lot more on Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay going forward, but I'm getting excited about that one. And I'm ready for Cody to be one of those cantankerous PCs.
I have very open mind when it comes to RPGs, and this one looks like nothing I've ever seen. So.
Yeah, until we turn the recorder off, and then
RPGs, I'm pretty wide open. I've been painting too. I'm about halfway through painting the Descent monsters.
Oh yeah,
that I got for Christmas.
They look great, dude.
They look absolutely great. So it's coming along. It's a big project. I keep looking at the unpainted ones. I'm like, oh, but with the dip, it's just 15 minutes a mini. Just paint the color blocks and then dip it, and you're good to go. So
I want to invite people over to play Descent, but then I feel like I have an inadequate set now. Well, Cody's got the painted.
Well, mine's only half painted, so it looks kind of ghetto now.
That's okay. Yeah, we got to get some Descent to the table too. I've played a little bit of HeroScape. Cody and I played a game of that a couple of weeks ago. A week ago, something like that.
Yeah.
That's always a lot of fun. And so that's pretty much it. Now there's one game that we played together that is a very important game, a timely game.
I wouldn't say it's that important.
It's timely, though.
It's timely.
Not important. But
I would dismiss its importance.
Okay. Tell them what we played.
Well, our friends over at Pizza Box Football, they put out a yearly kind of event where they say, pick the winner of the Super Bowl, and they'll put out the special stat cards for each team. So in this case, they put out a stat card for the Colts and a stat card for the Saints. And they encourage people to break out Pizza Box Football and play it and then report the results. So someone tipped us off on that on our guild.
Yeah, that was Mr. Todd Goff.
Todd Goff,
Sirloin of Beef on the Board Game Geek there.
That's right.
I didn't even know about that, so I was really glad that he posted that. So we were on that immediately. Matter of fact, I think he posted it the same day we were going to be having a game night, so it worked out great. Yep.
And so we did since we both would want to be the Colts, we did a roll-off to see who would get it, and I won. So John was the Saints, and I was the Colts.
Boo.
Yeah, and it was not a pretty result.
I don't know how I feel about this, because the final result was I won 28-0 Saints.
Right. Yeah,
and it was a Pyrrhic victory. It was not very good.
Right, and obviously this is obviously just a game and holds no weight whatsoever.
Obviously,
because Peyton Manning would not throw an interception and fumble it. And Joe Addai would not, well, maybe Joseph Addai would fumble it, but 28-0, that's abhorrent. That is an aberration that will never happen again. So enjoy that win, Saints fans, but the Colts are going to win the real deal.
Without a doubt.
Double digits.
You're predicting double digits.
I don't think it's going to be close.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens there. And we want to thank Eric Smith from On the Line Games. We sent in our results, and he sent us a nice email back to talking about that. So Pizza Box Football, we've talked about it on like 15 different episodes. Yep. It's a great, great game, and if you can pick up a copy of it, if you love football, please go get it.
Absolutely.
Well, that wraps up games that we've been playing. And so instead of going straight into emails like we normally do, we're going to jump
into some... People are waiting to hear about this.
Their iPods and MP3 players right now to hear about the results of the Tom Vassell fundraiser.
Now, we did have a last-minute potential name for it.
Right, because we've been trying to figure out what to call it. We've called it Atomic Relief and the Tomathon and all that kind of stuff. Right. So Sean Sullivan sent us an email in the inbox
said,
you know, kind of better late than never here. He said he had a suggestion for what we could call it. And his word or name for the fundraiser was the vasectomy.
Oh God!
he gave variants including the Korean vasectomy, the Great vasectomy, and his personal favorite vasectomy. This time it's okay to move during the procedure.
Wow.
Well, I can't say that nothing. I feel bad about the fact that we didn't say that for 2 months,
yeah.
but hey, we wanted to throw it out there right now.
Good timing.
Thank you very much, Sean. But the fundraiser is closed. We have closed the books on it, and it was an unqualified, amazing success.
I mean, you guys did an amazing job.
You stepped up like we didn't. It went way beyond our expectations.
What was the final total that we raised?
All right, so the final total as far as amount of money raised was we had $3,315 in donations.
And we had said, you know, kind of off the mic, you know, if we get $1,000, this would be a huge success. We didn't think we'd even get close to that.
Yeah, my wife, Rachel, I think she said, no, I think you're going to get even more than that. We're like, no way. So you guys stepped up huge. And so that's $3,315. Now, since we use PayPal for this sort of system, you know, PayPal's got to get their cut. And so little fees get taken out here and there. And so the actual amount of money that's in our PayPal account to be able to give to Tom after all the fees have been calculated out is $3,169.38. And all of that will go directly to Mr. Tom Vassell. We've already kind of contacted him, and we're going to transfer that via PayPal to him. And,
hopefully help him move.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's great. Now, you know, we've talked with Tom a little bit. He seems real happy about the way things have gone. So that's...
I would be too.
Rightfully so. But so thanks so much for that. But, you know, we also need to talk about the contest that goes
that's
along
right.
with this. And so with all of that, those entries, we had about 100... I don't have it right in front of me. I think it's 137 unique donors.
Wow.
For a total of 654 entries. Because you got an entry for every $5 that you donated. And so
someone's walking out with a lot of games.
Right. So we threw all this into a real big spreadsheet. We went to random.org and used their random number generator to generate a number between 1 and 654. And then we basically found out where that fell in our spreadsheet. And are we ready to announce the big winner?
I'm ready. I'm excited.
Now, before we announce the winner, we want to tell all of you out there what this winner is going to get. And we'll just go back over our prize package here.
Oh, wow.
So
grab a sandwich.
Grab a sandwich here. So we had a lot of great sponsors who ponied up some brand new games for this great fundraiser. And so we want to make sure to give them credit. So here's the big list, okay? And so this is what our winner is going to be getting. From Fantasy Flight Games.
Heard of them?
Right, at fantasyflightgames.com. Middle Earth Quest, Cosmic Encounter, Kingsburg, and Kingsburg to Forge a Realm, the expansion, and Age of Conan, the strategy board game. From Days of Wonder, daysofwonder.com. Thank you very much, Days of Wonder.
Thank you.
They've donated Colosseum, Ticket to Ride Marklin Edition, and Ticket to Ride the Card Game. From AEG, the Alderac Entertainment Group at alderac.com. Russian Crush, Monkey Lab, Abandoned Ship, Straw, The Isle of Dr. Necro, and Arcana. From Out of the Box Publishing, which I believe is otb-games.com. We'll put all these in the show notes. Matter of fact, I'll stop saying them. We'll put all the websites in the show notes because I don't want to mess them up. From Out of the Box Games, we have Word on the Street, Backseat Drawing, Letter Roll, Ninja vs. Ninja,
woo!
And 10 Days in Asia. From Crosscut Games, we have a copy of Galactic Emperor. From Bucephalus Games, we have a copy of Kachina, Dwarven Dig, Michelangelo, The Ten Commandments. From North Star Games, which is the sponsor of the Dice Tower, we have a copy of Say Anything, great party game. From Myriad Games, our great sponsor, they've sent us a nice care package of games that includes Tales of the Arabian Nights, the good brand game. New edition of that game, Wits and Wagers, second edition, Conquest of Pangaea, Take Stock, Fish Eat Fish, The Chain Game, which is another great out-of-the-box game, and the Puerto Rico PC game for a computer. Yeah. So, well, Cody wouldn't want that one, but that's just him. So there's your big list there. And in addition to that, what's the most important thing that they're going
to
be getting?
They will sadly get the Force Cody to Play a Euro Game With Them certificate, which they can redeem at any major convention that we will be at, which stands at Origins and Gen Con, I believe, right now.
That will be packed in the boxes because it'll obviously take multiple shipments to get all this stuff to our winner. But without further ado, we want to announce the winner. You ready for the drum roll?
I'm excited.
There we go. All right. So the winner of this great prize package for the Tom Vassell fundraiser is Patrick Ross from Winfield, Kansas.
Beautiful Winfield, Yay. Kansas.
Congratulations,
well done.
Patrick.
Well done.
Woo! And
I've never been to Winfield, Kansas.
I never have either. Yeah. I looked it up though to see kind of where it was in relation to us. It's about a 12-hour drive.
Well, we're not driving it out there.
We would come and deliver them to you in person, but that's a little bit past. It's it's January.
The game too, on jet.
All the snow. Yeah. But Patrick, congratulations on winning the contest here. And if you could send us an email at the Game On Inbox
at gameoninbox@gmail.com
and give us your mailing address, we'll do some communication with you about getting these games to you. Like I said, it might take a few shipments, but we'll be sure we get the ones that you want the most in the first shipment. So congratulations, Patrick. Thank you again to all the great gamers out there that helped to support Tom Vassell in this fundraiser. I know that Tom is very appreciative, and we were just really happy to do it. So
you guys rock. Thank you so much.
It's really cool to see the power of this this listenership and this audience, and just listeners to gaming podcasts in general. So we're pretty overwhelmed.
He's going to move to Indy now.
That would be awesome. That'd be totally awesome.
Low cost of living.
Got to introduce Tom to Gen Con. He's never been.
He's really missing out.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's that. Let's move on now in the Game On Inbox. I'm excited. You know?
I know.
Let's move on to some emails that we've been receiving. And Cody, you got the first one there from Brian Smith.
Yeah. Brian wanted to write in response to 2 points from our last episode. This is where we talked about doing an RPG group remotely, whether you have one or more members that either do it by webcam or what have you. He says, my RPG gaming group here in Columbus, Ohio, has been including two out-of-state members via webcam for over 4 years now, using no more than Skype and Yahoo Video IM. And he posts a link, which John will put in the show notes, because that's what he does, to show kind of what they did there. He says, it's a bit tricky to focus the camera on the tactical map once combat starts, but it's more than worth the trouble. So, yes, it can be done, and cheaply. Good to know.
And it's impressive, too, because when you click on that link, this is a blog post that he did back in 2005.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is something they've been doing for years, and doing it now seems pretty easy. Doing it back in 2005 would have been a lot more difficult.
Even easier now.
So, well done there, Brian.
And he also said he liked the discussion of people who show at the show up at the gym only until about mid-February before they lose interest in their resolutions. But he thinks instead of saying resolutionists, we should call them resolutionaries.
See, resolutionaries to me sounds like a positive thing.
Yeah.
Resolutionists, I would more put them in a negative category. No. But as someone who didn't make a resolution to go to the gym and is not going to the gym. So anyway, thanks, Brian, for that email. We also got a very nice email from listener Jesse Hickel. About our GM Academy episode, our last episode, where he says he just finished listening to that episode and he wanted to chime in on the best national anthem discussion.
Okay.
And he says that it's got to be Greece.
Oh, it's the word.
Very nice. I don't know exactly how it goes, he says, but it has 158 verses.
Ooh.
Imagine singing that whole thing at the start of a baseball game. And I did look that up. It actually is the Greek national anthem has 158 verses. It is the longest hymn in recorded history.
Ugh.
And
hope they don't win anything.
Yeah. But sure, why not? That sounds like a good one to me.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think God Save the Queen is still a pretty good
that's solid
good
one. Option. Oh, Canada, a strong second,
especially when Geddy Lee from Rush sings Oh Canada. That's a good one.
Maybe.
Okay. All right. What else we got here in the Game On Inbox?
Let's see. We have... oh, this is cool. I found this online before he emailed it to us. This is from Aaron Ament from, I don't know if it's Minot or Minot, North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Minot because no, that sounds classy. He says, I really enjoy your podcast and actually wanted to mention a more serious topic. Uh-oh. After work today, I was wondering how the memorial fund was going for Gary Gygax, who passed away about a year ago, was going. He did some Googling and found the following website set up by his widow. It is www.gygaxmemorialfund.com. And... if you think it is appropriate and are okay promoting on your podcast, we are.
We're good with that.
Yep. I would very much like it if you'd announce to all listeners if they who do have some small thing to say to go to his widow's site and let the world know how Gary Gygax impacted your life. Thanks for your time, Aaron. Yeah, there's like this kind of testimonial thing set up where you can just kind of type in long or short, however you want to do it, how D&D or other RPGs, you know, kind of impacted your life and how maybe Gary Gygax specifically impacted your life. And there's a lot of cool stories on there. So
yeah. And Aaron was a little concerned because he was the, I think he said he was the 20th comment.
Yeah.
And he just was blown away by the fact that there should be way more than 20 comments on there. Yeah. So maybe a lot of people didn't know about the site. So we want to let you know if you're a fan of Dungeons and Dragons or, you know, and Gary Gygax definitely a pioneer in that field. Go check that out. The reason why it's called Memorial Fund is they're trying to raise money to put some sort of like a statue, like a bust of Gary in Lake Geneva to sort of commemorate that.
That's cool.
To commemorate his life.
That'd be worth a road trip.
That would
sounds
be
really geeky,
no,
but that'd
no,
be fun.
I would take that trip. So Aaron, thanks for letting us know about that. And yeah, Mano or Manat, I'm not sure. And when you get up in the Dakotas there, it gets a little strange because like South Dakota's capital is Pierre.
It's not Pierre?
It's Pierre.
Oh.
From what I hear, you pronounce it Pierre. So
okay.
Could be anything. Could be pronounced.
I like Pierre.
Could be pronounced Indianapolis. All right. Well, also in the Game On Inbox, we got lots of emails this time, which is very cool.
We love it.
We love getting email from you guys. From our good friend, Matt Swetnam, who is a local listener and friend of ours. He said that he just finished listening to episode 36, the GM Academy. He said, kudos to Cody for giving a lot of sound advice. He said he would echo about everything that Cody said in the episode. Sycophant. I'm just kidding. In addition, he has a few thoughts of his own that he wanted to pass along. Now, before I read these thoughts here, Matt was actually the DM in my very first game of Dungeons and Dragons, and it was in a situation where he was a first time DM, and so that was a cool situation to be a new player and had a new GM, and so I it's kind of cool now that I'm going to be going into GMing too. So it's like, you know, the student has become the non-student. Anyway.
Wow.
Anyway, here's the tips that he has. Number one, know your players. This is a crucial for a first-time GM, in my opinion. Select people that you know will be understanding and patient with the new GM. Hey, maybe he's talking about me here.
Maybe.
I'm just saying. And be sure that they know that it's your first time GMing. You'll be surprised how much leeway people are willing to give you when they know your situation. Don't shy away from number two, don't shy away from experienced players. Yes, by including people who know a game better than you, it's possible you'll goof up and be corrected on a few of the rules, but that helps you to learn the rules better. Besides, when you need to find, say, a sword's damage bonus quickly, an experienced player's encyclopedic knowledge of weapons tables can come in mighty handy.
True.
That's very true.
You bundle that in with number one and you can get good people in there.
No, yeah, experienced nice people.
Right.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Number three, give your players responsibilities. Now, this is an interesting one here. Have someone take notes on the story. Have someone keep track of initiative. Have someone record the party's loot. Whatever. You have enough on your plate. The more jobs you can offload onto the players, the less you are burdened with yourself. Plus, this can be an easy way to help your players feel more invested in the game overall.
Great advice.
Good advice, you know. Have a player go get you a drink.
That's right. Make me a pie.
Fix you some nachos. Number four, know the outline, not the details. Don't burden yourself by thinking you have to know all the rules. That way lies madness. Reference books are your friends. So long as you know where to find a sword's damage bonus, you don't have to memorize the whole weapons table. So it says, long story short, too late. Don't sweat it, John. If you're half as good a GM as you are a PC, then you'll run a hell of a game.
Aww.
Thanks, Matt. So those are all really good pieces of advice, I think. So I'm going to take those to heart as well. And so, Cody, you can't be in my game now.
Well, thanks. but kidding. Kind of one other footnote on this whole, all these responses. We got a lot of responses on the GM Academy that I think my semi, not really regular RPG segment, you know, Tanglefoot Bag right now.
Right.
I think we may make that the GM Academy correspondence course, as it were.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Instead of that, so we're going to, instead of me talking about random RPG topics, we want you to send in RPG questions. We actually got a few, and I think maybe next episode we will throw in one. But we got a lot of good questions, and if you have questions on any aspect of RPGs, go ahead and send us an email, and I'll address it.
Absolutely. That's cool. You can put the little mortarboard on. We'll put the little, university music there.
Yeah, and,
very nice. All right. Well, so that's all the emails we got in the Game On Inbox we wanted to share with you this time. And let's move on to just a little bit of game news. First up from Days of Wonder, great board game publisher that has published so many good things. I can't even name them all. Has a new game that's going to be coming out this spring called Mystery Express. And it's going to be designed by Serge Lager, who was one of the co-designers of Shadows Over Camelot, and Antoine Bauza, who is the designer of the cooperative game Ghost Stories. So this is going to be a new deduction game from Days of Wonder. It's supposed to be coming out in April. And if you might remember, Days of Wonder also produced a game called Mystery of the Abbey.
I always wanted to try it.
Which is kind of, I've never played it either, but I hear it's sort of like Clue, but a little bit better. And it's you're playing like a monk who's trying to solve a murder. This says that unlike Days of Wonder's earlier Mystery of the Abbey, which Lager co-designed with Bruno Faiduti, Mystery Express explores the more analytical side of the genre, rewarding a logical and more precise approach to solving the crime. It's a 3-5 player game where players are going to be playing people who are on board the Orient Express, and they've just left the station in Paris when a murder occurs, and then they're on the trip to Istanbul, and they're not Constantinople. And they have to walk around on this train, and as they stop at different locations, people get on the train and off the train, and they have to collect clues where they're trying to deduce who the murderer is. And not even just that, but there's also a lot of other elements to it too, including like motive and the time of day that it occurred and things like that. So it may sound on the surface a lot like Clue, but I think there's a lot more to it, and there's a lot more interaction in the game. It's like a 5-round game, and each round will take place in one of the cities where the train is going to stop. Anyway, it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. I liked Clue okay, yeah. So...
I like deduction games like that. So
yeah, and I think that you put the Days of Wonder Chrome on top of it, and their quality of game design and rules, I think it's going to be pretty cool. Yep. So be looking for that one.
All right. We've got news from Wizards of the Coast, makers of Dungeons & Dragons, Magic, and all that good stuff. They are not renewing their Star Wars license with Lucasfilm, which they mainly used for the RPG product. There was a kind of like this collectible... they have the miniatures game, and then they also have this like 3D paper model miniature.
Oh,
thing.
Like the Pirates of the Spanish Main, where you can build the
like that.
Little plastic ships. Yeah,
yeah. So they have new products scheduled through April. They'll be available through August, and then no more from them. So
Okay.
I don't see anyone else picking up the license, because I imagine it's a really expensive license to have.
Oh, yeah.
And I know their...
George Lucas likes money.
Yeah. And I know their miniatures game does pretty well for Star Wars. I know their RPG sales. I mean, it's nowhere near what D&D is, and that's just kind of such a niche thing within a niche activity anyway. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Be interesting to see where Wizards goes here in the next year, because... I know they're doing the D&D Experience conventions going on right now just north of us up in Fort Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been hearing attendance is down. I haven't heard anything official, but I've heard it's a little down. So
they've got some stiff competition these days Pathfinder and Warhammer
and things like that. I hate to say I feel bad for a company, but you know, it's like because they've got a good product.
Yeah.
And I just think they've just had some really bad luck, and they're... Not getting a lot of breaks their way, so we'll see what happens with that. But
they still got Magic. I mean, I guess
they still got Magic.
That's probably their cash cow now, right?
Yeah, you know, they could almost probably go to an all Magic model and be fine. You think?
I think so. As long as they don't bring in a bunch of people that want to change Magic and and run that into the ground, I think they've done a real good. Then they've done a pretty good job of keeping Magic vibrant and new rules, and they've got the player base for tournaments and things like that. So, yeah.
So big news coming out of WotC. We'll see what happens.
All right. We got one more story in the Game On Inbox to tell you about, and it's sort of from the legal end of things. This is actually from the New York Times, this story. But apparently a 3-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the 7th Circuit has rejected the claims in a lawsuit challenging a ban on the game Dungeons & Dragons by the Correctional Institute in Wisconsin. So apparently the suit was brought up by a prisoner named Kevin Singer, who had argued that his constitutional rights, First and 14th Amendments specifically, were violated by the prison's decision to ban Dungeons and Dragons, and then they confiscated his books and other materials, including a 96-page handwritten manuscript that he'd created for the game.
Well-prepared DM.
Yeah, apparently he was a D&D enthusiast since childhood. And so this is just... he had been convicted of some pretty heinous crimes here, bludgeoning and stabbing death,
yeah.
Sort of a thing. But that sort of created a little bit of a buzz on the internet and so on, some legal blogs about whether this is a big deal or not. And one particular law professor, Ilya Somin from George Mason University, said that the prison's action was reminiscent of the media frenzy in the 80s surrounding the supposedly pernicious effects of gaming.
Yeah. As long as we don't have that again, I'm fine.
Yeah, it seems like that's kind of died down. And yeah. I think thanks to podcasts like ours and other RPG podcasts, the stock of role-playing games is rising in people's minds. I don't think they look at it as being so... fringe anymore.
I remember my mom was pretty concerned when I first wanted to get into it.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, she had seen like the 60-minute stuff in the 80s and heard all that crap and thought that I was going to be sacrificing cats or something. So
yeah, and you did. So
and I did. I'll miss Fluffy, but it's for the best.
All right. Well,
I got the third level.
That's all. That's all that matters, really.
We're joking.
So that's kind of an interesting story, from the mainstream press about role playing games. And it's kind of a tired thing at this point. I think the whole, role playing games are satanic or whatever. I mean, yeah. I know for us, it gets a little tiring to have to constantly defend that.
So. Especially when you're adults and people are like, ooh, it's like. It's a game. Shut up.
All right. Well, this was a pretty large sized...
A husky
game on Inbox this episode, but had a lot of great stuff to tell you. And so if you ever want to get a hold of us, and we love it when you send us questions.
We love emails.
Love emails. Love the interaction with all of the listeners, all you guys, all the common gamers out there. We invite you to send us an email at the Game on Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And we will get back to you either via email or you might hear your email on the show. So... be sure to contact us. And I think it's time to close the Game On Inbox, and it's time to move on to the big deal where we'll be giving you the parameters for...
the Game On Seal of Approval.
The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. Time for the big deal, and John and I are really excited about this one. This is an idea we've been kicking around for a while now, and it's the idea of the Game On Seal of Approval. John and I have talked about it in the past how we really want to support those friendly professional gaming stores that go above and beyond and provide excellent service and a great place to shop, not even just for gamers, but for non-gamers as well. And so we're going to kind of lay down our idea for this, not really a promotion.
It's kind of an award almost.
An award, major award.
It's us rewarding great game stores, and we can't say that we have a whole lot of credentials other than the fact that we're just like you. We're just common gamers who have money to spend occasionally, mm-hmm. and we want to know the best places to spend it, and we want to support friendly professional game stores. We use that term quite a bit. We got it from Dan at Myriad,
yeah.
but that's a good term that we want the professional game stores. And so often we have gone in to stores that have just disappointed us time and time again.
And we have a lot. We have a large sample size here. I mean,
yeah, there's probably 6 or 7 game stores here in Indianapolis.
Just within a half an hour's drive from here, we can hit that many. So we want to give you the criteria what we're looking for. If you really think your store can meet up to the credentials of the Game On Seal of Approval, that sounded kind of
that's right.
Very goodness. Then we'd like to hear it, but. We're going to tell you what you need to do to submit your store.
Yeah, and before we do that, we're going to talk a little bit about just some differences between good and bad game stores.
Right.
We had an episode a few back called Story Time where we talked a
little bit.
Hey, yeah, very nice. That was Cody's idea.
Yeah. sorry.
We talked about our good and bad experiences with stores, but even recently I've had a couple of interesting experiences in game stores that I wanted to share with you. And one of them was when I was in Texas, I always liked, whenever I go anywhere, I like to just kind of Google and search for local game stores just to see, what's available. And so, I was there with my stepmom and we went to this place called Area 51, which is a game store in Grapevine, Texas. And we walked in, and you know, it's kind of like when you go on a first date or something. You know, you get that, you know, you never have the second chance to make a first impression. So
right.
When you walk into a store, you sort of get a vibe for how it's going to go. And so, and when we walked in, there were gamers in the back playing. I think they were putting together some kind of RPG, something or other. They were doing a campaign there, and there was no one else really in the store. But there were two employees, and one of them was restocking shelves. And as soon as we walked in, we got a hello. And you know, that doesn't seem like that would be a big deal, but it kind of is. And they also pretty much left us alone most of the time. But when we would pick up certain games, would be interested. We could tell that they were paying attention to what we were doing and seemed interested in telling us more about certain games.
Yeah, there's that fine line, you know, between not being invested in you and not asking if you need anything. And then there's that other side of the line where they're just constantly hounding you and,
right.
You know, you can't have any time to browse because like, oh, if you like that, you'll like this. And they just keep on you, keep on you, keep on you.
Yeah. And so much about quality of customer service has to do with knowing and engaging with your customer to where you don't see someone walk in and immediately think, well, they're not a gamer. Let me go and try to sell them a copy of Apples to Apples and Settlers of Catan, you know? But you know, they sort of draw you out and ask you questions about what kind of things you like. If you like this, then you might like this, and have good, you know, good suggestions for you, not just some sort of stock answer to get a sale out of you.
Right.
So I was just really impressed that as I was kind of walking around, and you know, I know a lot about a lot of the games that are in their store. They had a pretty good selection of things, and I was telling my stepmom, who I hadn't seen in a while, about some certain games, and we came across a big display of Arcane Legions, that mass market miniatures game that just came out this year. And I was showing her that. I was sort of explaining to her the system. And the guy just kind of came over and said, hey, you know, I have a whole bunch of that stuff in the back. If you'd like me to bring it out, I could like do a demo for you and you know, show you how it works, you know, so you don't have to be trying to explain it by looking at the front of a box. And I told him, no thanks, you know, because we didn't really want to get into a big demo at that time. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he offered to do that was really nice.
Yeah,
that's huge. And the guy was kind of an older gentleman, but a very much a gamer looking kind of a guy, mm-hmm. you know, to use that stereotype. But he was still very engaging with my stepmom, who's very much not a traditional gamer type. You know, she likes some Euro games and things like that. But, and then when we ended up buying a couple games and checking out, and the guy who was at the counter was, very, very nice and just was asking questions just about us in general and just seemed to be wanting to start a conversation up. These all things are things that seem like no-brainers in any other kind of situation. If you walk into The Gap or Barnes & Noble, mm-hmm. you're going to get this kind of stuff just as a given.
Yeah.
But in game stores, you're not really going to get this sometimes. You know, he gave my stepmom a card and said, if there's ever a game that you don't see in here that you need for us to order, we would be happy to do that for you and we'll let you know. And I've had game stores tell me that before too, but it was just the way that he told my stepmom and the way he engaged with her.
Professional. I mean, that's
extremely
what it screams
professional.
To me, you know.
Yep. He even came up to the counter. We had to wait at the counter for 30 seconds because he was in the back room or something, and he came out. He was extremely apologetic. Said, "I'm so sorry that I made you wait," you know. And it was just big time thumbs up. I mean, I don't live in Texas anymore, but if I did, that might be my local game store because it was really good. So that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even more than that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the customer service part that is going to earn the game on seal of approval.
That's
so
right.
So what other kind of things would we be looking for, would you think?
Well, we're looking for things like kind of events that they put on. And we're talking more than just a Friday Night Magic, you know. What kind of events are they doing to really kind of rally the gamers in their area and maybe rally the non-gamers in their area? Say, hey, come demo. We're doing this new demo of Magic or War Machine or what have you.
Yeah.
What kind of events that kind of expand the customer base away from just, you know, the 10 guys that are there every week? You know, what are you doing to really kind of reach out to the community, bring some more people in, or even so much, you know, giving back to the community if they're doing some events like that maybe get their name out there and help change that perception of gamers, as it were, you know?
Right. Right. And so those kind of events really forward the hobby, you know, and don't just create just a clubhouse environment. And there have been to plenty of stores that are that way, where it just sort of seems like, you know, it's just the boys club in the back there playing their, you know, multi-sided dice games.
Yeah.
And you know, no one else is really invited. So this is kind of the idea that we're looking mm-hmm. for here, you know, because there's, you know.
Personal stories are good, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember this is before the Game Preserve on the south side of Indianapolis became the Licorice Game Preserve. It was still firmly planted in the mall. And it was right when I had learned D&D at school. So, you know, as a freshman in high school. And I went there and I'd saved my money to buy a player's handbook and a tube of dice. And, you know, I had never really done the game store thing much. I'd kind of gone in and bought Magic cards. But the guy who helped me, you know, said, you know, I wasn't really sure what book to get. He's like, you know, get this book to start. He even said, you don't need all of these other optional accessories. He could have made a good bit of money on me that day. Mm-hmm. But he's just like, you just need this. Get you a nice tube of dice. You'll be good to go. And then when you play more, just come in and we'll help you get more stuff. And great. That still just resonates with me today. You know, I'll find one of those original dice that I had in that tube, and it just kind of hits me. I'm like, oh yeah, man, that could have gone completely different if I would have had bad customer service.
Yeah, absolutely.
So personal stories, that's something we're looking for too. We're not looking for emails where you say, oh yeah, you know, John's Games is a great game store. You know, they got like, good stock, good customer service. That's it. It's like, no.
Right, right.
We need more than that.
Because we want to make this sort of have a bit of prestige to it.
Yeah.
And also we want to be able to reach out to people and game stores and networks of game stores around the country here. You know, we're here in Indianapolis and we can network with our own game stores and that kind of stuff. But you know, our podcast has reached all the way around the world. And so, you know, we want to be able to have, that kind of promotion, I guess, for other game stores. And so we want it to be a way that when people come into a game store and they see that their game store has the Game On seal of approval, mm-hmm. you know, that they'll ask that question. Well, you know, what is that all about? You know, and that it'll have some merit to it. We want to kind of build up a reputation for this as being something that's really worthwhile, because we're going to be tough on entrance for this.
Yeah. This won't be a, you know, it's not like we're having a game store of the month. You know, we will award it as, you know, we don't want to be snobs about it, but we're going to award it as we see the criteria met, you know,
right.
as we see the entries. And we plan on contacting the owners and, you know, maybe setting up phone interviews or email interviews or things like that, and just really making this a personal thing.
Yep. So here is kind of the way we want to structure this. Is that if you, where you live, have a friendly professional game store that you just love and that you think meets this criteria of going above and beyond just the average game store and is really helping to further the hobby and is really helping to keep friendly professional game stores in business, because for a hobby that's growing as much as gaming seems to be growing over the past 10, 15 years, it just seems like game stores are coming and going just as they always have been, that there's not a concerted effort to increase the quality of game stores. And that's really part of the purpose of this. So if you have a game store that you feel meets all of those criteria and you have some specific examples, then what we want you to do is to send an email to the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com. And you can just put in the subject line, seal of approval or game store or something like that. We'll find it. Mm-hmm. And just tell us why you think that your local game store deserves the Game On seal of approval. If you have friends who also enjoy that game store, we would invite you to encourage them to write in as well. But it, you know, like Cody said, we're going to be tough on this. It's not just going to be, what Bob said. Yeah,
plus one.
Yeah. It's not going to be, oh, we got 15 entries of that one. That means this one wins.
Right.
No, we want to make sure we really delve down into why is this game store worthy of this prestigious honor. And so once we have decided that we're going to award a Game On seal of approval to a game store, we are going to plan on contacting that game store directly via phone and see if we can set up a brief 10 to 15 minute interview with them that we will have here on the show, where they can promote their local game store. And for those local listeners of Game On that, you know, are near that game store, that gives them an opportunity to go to that game store. And for those of you who wouldn't be near that game store, it gives you the opportunity to hear about some quality things going on. Maybe hear some ideas that you can go back to your not so great game store and suggest for improvement. You know,
yeah.
The whole goal of this being to raise the level of quality of game stores in the United States and in around the world.
Yeah.
And so to kind of mark this prestigious award in the game store, so it's very visible. What are we going to do for the game store?
Well, we're going to create a kind of like almost a poster-like thing that they can put in their store somewhere, and just saying that they have received this Game On seal of approval. You know, we might even do a little certificate or whatnot,
yeah,
something like that. You know, send a stack of our cards. I will say this: we're not doing this more as a promotional for us. You know, like getting our name out there, because at least I speak for myself. I really don't care. You know, for
right.
two listeners, we have 2,000 listeners. I don't really care.
I mean, that might be a side effect of this, but that's not the goal.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, you know, with us being the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, we really want to champion that cause and help you find good places to spend your gaming dollar where you feel it's going to a good place, basically. So we're going to have this poster. We're going to, you know, do a certificate for him. We might think of other little tchotchkes to throw in there. But we want people to see that somewhere outside of the region, necessarily, because I think we'll get entries from far out, you know,
not just
Indianapolis, but that, you know, this gaming store was good enough to merit mention on a show miles and miles away.
Right.
And that, you know, maybe this is a good place to spend your dollar, and you might want to ask about what kind of things they did to receive such an award. You know, you could have a new customer come in. It's like, well, what did you do to get that? Well, let me tell you, we offer this. You know, we do.
Yeah, come in on Thursday because we got this event that they were really impressed with. Yeah.
Yeah. We just want to, it's in the end, it's positive reinforcement. We want to, if they're doing a good job, we want to celebrate that and help them out and maybe get them more customers by showing that they are a quality game store.
Right. And we have really no credentials other than the fact that we are gamers like you, and we just happen to have an audience of other gamers, you know, who listen to us. So we want to be able to use that to raise the quality of game stores. So that's the Game On seal of approval. So, you know, get your thinking caps on there. And if you think that your game store rates this meritorious award,
magnanimous
award, then send us an email at the Game On inbox and we will assess that and we'll get back with you about it. So that's, I think, the big deal. It's just kind of a shorter one.
Yeah.
You know, but we had a husky Game On inbox. Yeah. So
and you'll be hearing about this later on in future episodes. So
absolutely. Yeah.
So it's not over yet.
Yep. And so now let's go ahead and move on into our buyer tryout tonight. We're going to take a look at that new card game from AEG, Thunderstone.
Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. All right. It is buy, try, or deny time. And we have, I would call it a new hotness game AEG. We have Thunderstone. And here to give you the common gamer rules breakdown is John.
Thunderstone. It was released here in 2010 by AEG, the Alderac Entertainment Group.
You kind of broke into that like a grandpa telling a story. Well, Thunderstone.
Back in my day, there was a game called Thunderstone.
Sorry, I usually stay out of the way.
No, it's all right. It's good to know you're awake.
I'm going to go back to sleep
now. The game was designed by Mike Elliott with some great art and graphics by Jason Engel. And so this game is for 2 to 5 players, which is a little bit different from Dominion, which is 2 to 4 players. And the reason why I mentioned Dominion, which I'll mention several times in this review, is that this game is probably the first one to come out since Dominion that has almost the exact same kind of mechanic of deck building, where you're going to be acquiring cards and then discarding them, and then eventually those discards will end up back in your deck, and your deck will get bigger and bigger, and you know, you'll use those cards to purchase other cards and so forth and so on. There's a lot of similarities to Dominion. There's also a lot of differences, because what you're going to use the cards for is going to be kind of different. So in this game, the object of it is that you are going to acquire things for your deck, which are in an area called the village. And so these might be things like heroes and weaponry and magic and things like that. The theme of the game is medieval fantasy, basically. It's like kind of the D&D style world. And so you're going to do collect all of these things in your deck so that on later turns you can go into an area called the dungeon, where you're going to fight monsters with all of the things that you have acquired. And you'll have heroes equipped with weapons and things like that. And then you're going to defeat those monsters. Those monster cards will come into your deck, and those will give you victory points. And it's those victory points at the end of the game that are going to win you the game. The end of the game is triggered by the appearance of this thing called the Thunderstone, which is basically just a card you throw into the dungeon deck, which will show that you're done with the game. So that's the main goal. So much like Dominion, where your goal is to acquire money so that you can buy the victory point cards, the point of this game is to acquire stuff and heroes and things like that so that you'll be strong enough to defeat the monsters that will give you the victory points. So how does the game work? So setting up the game involves laying out these decks of cards onto the table, and there is a wide variety of decks to choose from, and you're going to choose a certain number in each game. Much like Dominion, there is a first game setup that they recommend, and there are going to be 16 total decks of cards that are sitting out in front of you, 16 stacks. 4 of those stacks are the same in every game, and those are the cards for the dagger, the torch, the Iron Rations, and the Militia. So those 4 decks are going to be in every single game. And then you're going to have 8 decks that represent different sort of village items like weapons and gemstones and magic fireballs and that kind of stuff. All those kind of weapons and abilities. And then there's also going to be 4 decks of cards that represent your different kinds of heroes. There's way more types of heroes in the game than just 4, but you'll always have 4 available to you. And so, like, in your first game, they recommend that you use the Therian Squire and the Elf Wizard and the Lorig Thief and the Cleric as well. So you'll put all 16 of those decks of cards onto the table. And then you're also going to have an area called the Dungeon. Now, the dungeon deck is created from 3 different types of monsters. There's multiple types of monsters in the game, and there's 10 cards for each monster type. You're going to pick 3 of those, creating a 30-card deck of monsters, and you're going to shuffle that up, and that's your dungeon for the game. Then you're going to take this one card called the Thunderstone, and you're going to deal out 10 cards from that dungeon deck, add the Thunderstone card in there, mix up all 11 of those cards, and then put that on the bottom of the dungeon deck. So it basically means that it randomizes that the Thunderstone will be in the bottom third of the dungeon deck somewhere. It could be the last card, the first, or somewhere in the middle. So that's how you set up that. Then you're going to each player will have their own starting hand of cards. The starting hand is always 6 militia cards, 2 iron rations, 2 torches, and 2 daggers. So it's a hand of 12 cards. Well, really, it's actually a deck of 12 cards. That's your starting deck, is those 12 cards. So you'll shuffle those up and make your deck, and then you're going to draw 6 cards. Again, Dominion players, your hand size in Dominion is 5. Here in Thunderstone, it's 6. So that's kind of how you get the game all set up. There's also a disease deck, because some of the monsters might give you diseases. That's sort of akin to the curse card in Dominion. And then you'll also have a deck of experience point cards, which are the cards that you're going to get when you defeat the monsters. In addition to victory points, you'll also get experience points, which can be used to level up your heroes. So playing the game is real simple, because you have one of 3 options that you can do on your turn. You can either visit the village, enter the dragon, enter the dragon, Bruce Lee, enter the dungeon. That should be a blooper, but I'm going to leave that in. Enter the dungeon or rest. So the easiest one of those 3 is rest. So when you rest, you may destroy 1 card from your hand. Destroy is the term, again, matching with Dominion, is akin to trashing a card. So that would be taking a card and removing it completely from the game and from your deck of cards. And then you'll discard your entire hand and draw 6 new cards. So that is the rest phase. It's just a good way to get a card out of your hand that you don't really want anymore. The next thing you could possibly do in your turn instead is to visit the village. So when you visit the village, it allows you to buy 1 card from any of the cards that are in that set of 12 cards that are sitting, or 16 cards that are sitting out in front of you. And so each of the cards has a cost on it, right, printed in the middle, a cost in number of coins. And one thing that's nice is that just about every card that you get in this game is going to have some kind of a money value on it. So on the left-hand side of the card, there's an icon for money to show what the value of it is. So you can look in your hand, add up all of the money values of your cards, and that's how much money you have to spend on your 1 card that you're going to buy. Once you buy that card, you're going to discard it. Then you're going to discard your entire hand and then draw back up to 6. If you ever run out of cards in your deck, you're going to shuffle up all of your discards and make a new deck. Very much like Dominion in that respect. So you can buy that 1 card. Now, if you happen to buy a hero card, those kind of cards are a little bit different, because the hero deck itself has sort of some layers to it. So let's say you have the Therian Squire, which is sort of just a fighter character. You can buy that card from the top of that deck, and the first few cards in that deck are Therian Squires, but then the next few after that are Therian Knights, yeah, which is the level 2 of that hero. And then at the very bottom, there are 2 cards called Therian Lords, which is the level 3 character. So you can always buy whichever hero is on the top of that stack. So if people buy a bunch of Therian Squires throughout the course of the game, then eventually a Therian Knight might be the top card, in which case you can just go ahead and pay the cost for that. But the other way that you can level up your character is to use experience points. And at the bottom of each hero card, there's a number of experience points. You can discard those experience point cards in order to destroy that particular hero and then go into that deck and find the next level and go ahead and put that into your hand. So those, and these are more powerful heroes that can do better stuff when you get into the dungeon area. So that's the sort of the leveling up part of this. So when you visit the village, you can buy a card, and then also you can level up any of the heroes that you have. If you have enough experience points, you can actually level up multiple heroes that are in your hand. The only rule is that you can't level up the same hero twice. So you can't go from level 1 to level 3 in one turn. So that's the village phase, and then the what you're trying to do in getting all of these cards is to eventually go into the enter the dungeon phase. The dungeon is set up in such a way that you have your main deck of dungeon cards, and then you have three ranks of cards that are turned over, turned face up. So you have three monsters of visible to you during the game. So the card that is farthest away from the deck is considered rank 1. Then rank 2, and then the card that's right next to the deck is considered rank 3. You can sort of think of these in terms of how far you're going into the dungeon. So the rank 1 card would be like, you know, right outside the entrance of the dungeon. And then as you go farther in, you get these monsters that are closer to that deck. The main reason you want to think of it in these terms is regarding light. Because in order to attack something, you have to be able to see it. And so with each level that you go in, each rank that you are trying to attack, you're going to have some sort of a light penalty. So the rank 1 cards that are farthest away from the deck, those have a light 1 penalty, and for every penalty of light, you have a minus 2 to your attack. And so this is kind of the penalty that you have for not having quite as much light. If you go to the rank 2 cards, now you're getting farther into the dungeon, those cards have a light 2 penalty, which is a minus 4 to your attack. And then the third rank is a light 3, minus 3 penalty, which is a minus 6 to your attack. So for every point of light, it's a minus 2 to your attack. That's a little bit fiddly to understand. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's kind of how the light thing works. So on your turn, if you decide that you want to enter the dungeon and try to attack one of the monsters, then you're going to take your hand of cards and you're going to reveal the entire hand. And so then you're going to basically try to put combinations of stuff together from your hand to be able to attack a monster that's on the board there. Now, the monsters have a wide variety of different abilities and traits that they can do. Some of them add a light penalty on top of the penalty that you might already have. Some of them can't be hit with certain weapons. Some of them get half damage from certain weapons. Some of them, even after you've defeated it, it still destroys one of your characters, one of your heroes. So that's really governed a lot by what is on the card itself. But the basic mechanic is that you'll reveal your entire hand, and then you're going to take your heroes and you're going to maybe equip them with some weapons. So, you know, maybe you have your Therian squire that you just got, and you'll give him a dagger. Now, the way that you are able to attach those weapons is based upon the strength value of the hero. So there's an icon for strength. And then on the weapon, there's a value for weight to show how much the weapon weighs. And so a hero can only carry a weapon that has a weight value that's up to their strength. And so there might be situations where you'll have a weapon that's too heavy for your hero to carry. But there's also modifiers for that. So like your iron rations food card that you get in your starting deck will give any one hero plus 2 strength, which will allow them to carry a heavier weapon. So you're going to take your heroes and lay them out and attach weapons to them. You might have some special abilities, some magic attacks, all these kind of things. And then you're going to add up your total attack value, and then you're going to assess whether you can defeat that monster or not. And it's really at that point that you can pick which monster you're going to attack. You don't have to like say, I'm attacking that monster, and then reveal your cards. You can sort of work it all out later on. But you sort of want to know ahead of time whether you can defeat that monster or not before you reveal your cards. So you'll add up all those things and just kind of do the math of whether you're going to defeat the monster or not, keeping in mind those light penalties. Backing up about the light thing is that you have those light penalties, but you also might have weapons like a flaming sword, or you also have your torch, which will provide points of light. And so every point of light that those things offer will reduce that light penalty. So if you go into the very first rank, then you have a minus 2 penalty, because it's a 1 light penalty. Then if you have a torch, then that's going to negate that, and so you won't have that minus 2. So a little bit of math as far as figuring out whether you're going to defeat something or not. If after you've put all that together, if you have a attack value that is equal to or higher than the health value or life value of the monster, then you defeat it. If that's the case, then you're going to take that monster card, and that's kind of your trophy there, and you're going to discard it into your deck. Now, once the monster is in your deck, it can only do a couple of things. One, it's probably going to have some kind of a money value, so you can actually use it for money later on in the game. Other than that, it probably won't do very much for you, except there are certain cards that will actually give you a bonus, like an attack bonus or some kind of protection during a later fight in the dungeon. So those are pretty good cards to have too. When you take that monster card, it's also going to have at the bottom of it a number of victory points that you're going to get at the end of the game, and also an icon for the number of experience points that you get. And when you get experience points, those come from a deck of experience point cards, and you will actually draw a number of cards equal to that number of experience points. Those experience point cards do not go back into your deck. They actually just sit right on the table in front of you, and you can draw from those later and use them to level up your character. So, you know, make sure those don't go back into your deck, because that'll end up being really confusing. So those will be on the table in front of you. And so then you're going to discard everything that you've just used in order to fight the dungeon. You're going to draw a new card for another monster in the dungeon. Everything will shift down one level, and then you'll put that monster onto the rank 3 position. And then you'll draw back up to 6 cards, and it'll go on to the next person. So it seems like there's a lot of steps in that, but it's actually pretty straightforward once you sort of get the flow of things. But that is the entering the dungeon phase. So visiting the village, resting, entering the dungeon, those are the main things that you can do. So you're going to be acquiring stuff so that you can fight monsters in the dungeon, get those experience points, level up your character. As far as leveling up your character goes, if you have a Therian Squire, for example, and you want to level up to the knight, you know, like I said, you can use those experience points at that time and discard them to level that one up. So that is pretty much the overall flow of the game and how it works. And you know, there's a lot of variety because you have different decks of cards that you're not going to use every single time. Like I said, the game is going to end when that Thunderstone comes out and when it gets to the rank 1 position. Now, if you happen to have defeated a rank 1 monster and then that causes the Thunderstone to move into rank 1, then you can take that Thunderstone as a final trophy. It's worth 3 victory points. Otherwise, whatever will move it to the number 1 position will cause the game to end. At that point, you're going to look through all your cards and find all the ones with victory points, which are all your monsters, and any of your highest level heroes. So if you upgraded your hero all the way to level 3, a lot of times they're going to generate a couple of victory points for you too. You add up all the victory points, and whoever is has the most is the winner. If there's a tie, then whoever has the Thunderstone out of the tied players would be the winner. And if that isn't the case, then all the winners share their victory, and no one is happy at all. So that is Thunderstone. And Cody, let me go ahead and get your impressions on this game from AEG.
You know, it was kind of only a matter of time until people saw the success of Dominion, and you kind of knew this fantasy deck building genre was going to just... Dominion pretty much created its own genre with that. You know, yeah. There's going to be more people try to emulate that. And the theme itself is interesting to me. It's like they tried to take the straight deck building idea and tried to... I don't want to say Ameritrash it up a bit, but, you know...
But
Ameritrash it up a little bit, you know, which... I can appreciate the effort there. It's just a very odd game. Like I said, it just feels very clunky to me. Uh-huh. Whereas Dominion, I would describe as just a very elegant feel as far as game design. And I know it's the more Euro-ish of the two, I guess. But Dominion, I don't know. It just seems much more straightforward. And Thunderstone just seems to be kind of clunky and weighed down. And I don't know. Not the experience I want to get from a game like that. It wasn't really what I thought it would be at all, and it, I don't know, it's just hard to describe. Clunky is the word I would use. It just didn't...
You didn't really like it.
It didn't do a whole lot for me, no.
Okay.
I would play Dominion, you know, as if we wanted Jones Theory, I'll pick Dominion easily.
Right.
You know, I think they're similar enough there. It's a good first effort. I think we'll see better deck building games come out in the vein of Dominion that try to push the envelope. I think this is just kind of a clumsy first step toward that... next generation of deck building games.
Okay. Well, and this is a case where, and Cody and I have talked about this before we started the recording tonight, is definitely a game where we have a dissenting opinion. Because mm-hmm. I really, really liked this game, and I thought it was very well designed, very closely designed to the theme. So you sort of felt like the things that you were doing, as far as I'm concerned, made sense going along with the theme. And there were a couple of little picky details that I didn't like about it. I think the light bonus or light penalty thing is really, I mean, it's hard for me to explain just here giving you guys the rules explanation. It's really kind of tricky. Now, they did do an updated version of the rule book. So we got the very first version of the rule book. Since then, a lot of folks online have expressed their discontent with some of the rules on BoardGameGeek, and the publishers and designers have listened, and they've already made some updates, a couple of updates to the rule book, and have published those on AEG's website as a PDF. So that's really nice that they're at least very responsive and wanting to sort of listen to what the fans are saying about the game. But I thought it was great. I liked the fact that it had a different feel to me than Dominion. Whereas with Dominion, you start the game off and you look at the cards that are on the board and you say, well, I'm going to buy this card and this card and this card to create that combination, and that'll hopefully be my engine that'll drive the game. And the only thing that's going to really stop you is possibly some attack cards, which you could just buy a couple of motes and save yourself from that. So you start the game with a strategy, and you just see whether you can whether it can reach completion by the end. And I like that. I mean, Dominion's my favorite game right now. But this game was cool, Thunderstone, because you really do have to sort of cater your deck building to what monsters are out there and what kinds of monsters are out there. I mean, if you've spent your whole first few turns buying up a bunch of swords, and then you have monsters that are coming out that can't be affected by edged weapons, well, then you need to change your strategy. And you could say that maybe if you'd known that ahead of time, you could have started from the very beginning with a better strategy. But it felt like there's a lot more of an ebb and flow to this game of having to change your strategy mid-game and be more tactical because of the monsters that are coming out. So I understand what Cody's saying about the clunkiness, and it is not as elegant and fast flowing and moving as Dominion, but I still really, really liked it. So given all that, and listeners, take that for what you will, because Cody and I are very different people too, and so we would hope that as you're listening, whatever kind of gamer you identify with more, me or Cody, then go that direction. So having said all that, Cody, Thunderstone, buy, try, or deny?
It's a deny for me.
Wow.
it's too clunky. It's for a game that, for a deck building game, I think you have to have a certain amount of, not necessarily speed, but it's got to be streamlined, I think, for that. At least to me, that's an important hallmark of a game like that. I think this game is just clunky. It tries to throw too many little fiddly bits into the mix, and I think it's just a poor reflection. It's just trying to jump on the Dominion train. I just don't think it did a good job of it. I think this theme, if you want to talk just theme, there are five games I could nail off the top of my head that would be better for this. It's just a clunky game. I think it's kind of messy. It's just not worth your time, in my opinion. So a strong deny for Thunderstone for me.
Wow.
Thank you. John, buy, try, or deny for Thunderstone.
This may be the widest spectrum swing that we've ever had on the show, because I'm going to give this one a buy.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
No.
All right.
And I'll say that with the, much like last time, with the asterisk that I do not believe that this game is Jones Theory approved. I'll go ahead and say that. Because it's the Jones Theory and not the Richard Theory, I feel like I can say that a game is a buy and still isn't Jones Theory compliant. Sure. For those of you who don't know, Jones Theory is the idea that one game per genre or per mechanic or per theme, right?
Owner's choice,
right. And so I would say that if you're looking for a deck-building game, Dominion is the better game by far. Dominion is the better game, but Thunderstone has definitely a different feel to it. I did not find it at all to be clunky. I found it to be not as fast flowing as Dominion, but I didn't find that halfway through the game I was going, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do, and I don't know what to play or whatever. It started to flow after I learned the rules. So I think the theme is cool. I think that the The dungeon part of it is very cool, and I didn't have any problem with it. So I thought it was a really cool game and original in the way that they put together like the leveling up of heroes and stuff like that. So I give it a buy. I think you should go check it out. It's actually at a lower price point than Dominion, I believe. I won't say what it is because I can't remember the exact numbers on it, but I don't think it costs quite as much as Dominion, which is pretty cool. So
don't waste your time. Go play Dominion.
All right. Well, so we have a buy from John and a strong deny
yeah.
from Cody. So, yep. You know, take from that whatever you will, but that is Thunderstone.
We thank you for listening to another episode. We also thank you to everyone who donated for the vasectomy, if you were, the Tomathon, the get Tom the Hell Out of Korea Fund, whatever you want to call it. Thank you very much for that.
Yes,
you guys did a great job.
It was an amazing, amazing success.
Yep. If you want to reach us for any reason, you can email us at the Game On Inbox.
That's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
We love getting emails from you guys. And be thinking if you want to submit your friendly professional gaming store for our Game On Seal of Approval.
Yeah, come up with some real good examples because, you know, we're gonna be tough.
Yep.
but send us an email.
You can also check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. You can subscribe to all of the latest podcasts, any written reviews we do. We're also on Twitter, Game On Podcast, all one word. So you can get your Game On fix in a myriad of ways.
Exactly.
Ah,
very nice. Oh, I suppose I have to throw in, speaking of Myriad, yeah. Check out Myriad Games at myriadgames.com. Hey, well. All right, well, join us in 2 weeks. We'll have another great episode for you. We're going to be taking a look at a new game from Z-Man Games, from the designers of 1960, The Making of the President, another politically themed game called Campaign Manager 2008.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. So check that out in 2 weeks, and we'll look forward to seeing you then. And until then,
go Colts and game on.
You'll set up the game by setting up first the village area of the card of the game.
The guy with the thing in the cards and the killing and the experience.
I'm an experienced podcaster.
There's our blooper.